From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're listening to Damian Richardson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show on the 1st of May, this fine 1st of May, May Day, as it is for many people, I'm sure, especially for me today, because, you know, I've been talking about the last 2 weeks, I've been complaining a lot about my children being at home because the difficulty that I run into when they're hanging around me all the time and sure, the difficulties for them too when they're asking me at 10 o'clock at night, you know, I haven't been out yet today, Dad, you know, let's do something. I'm like, it's 10 a.m., p.m., what do you want me to do? But the thing is, they went back to school Thursday, and that's all great. It was like, oh, yes, you know, everyone was a little bit relieved, even though the kids said they hate school. But today, one of them's got a curriculum day at home again. Does Thursday, Friday, then there's a curriculum day on the Monday after having had 2 weeks off. How does that work? I need some union representation for being a host of a radio show because I reckon it's the it's not a bad job if you can get it. I'm sure, I know I've met a lot of fine teachers, so I don't want to dig too many holes in that front. They're very good people. I see today too, speaking of May Day and help, that there's some media personalities appearing on television painted in lipstick to help with female mental health. Of course, these men are wearing lipstick, and again, it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's the debasement of masculinity that you have to appear on a television program with lipstick on. And sometimes I think we need to be careful of eulogizing the people that suffer from mental health, because I know this particular person that they were talking about helping was spoken about by her mother as being an alcoholic. Substance abuse issues too, and addiction's it's a scarifying disease. I don't want to make light of anyone that suffers from it, but ultimately there is help. There is help for people, and I don't know that wearing lipstick would make any difference. As a matter of fact, today, 24 years for me since I have partaken of drinking alcohol myself, and that came with just a lot of hard work and persistence, and that's what would be required of anyone. And there's plenty of women too I've met who've done exactly the same thing, and I don't know that a media personality tarting themselves up in lipstick would make any difference to that fact. And maybe it would. I don't know. There's many things I don't understand about the world, this universe I live on, this earth I live on. So maybe if you highlight this issue, someone sitting in their lounge room will be watching the, you know, morning Channel 7 show, and they'll say, yeah, wow, that's, yeah, I need some help. Or is it really about bringing an understanding and awareness for funding so the government can fund it? And ultimately, if people want to do something about themselves, I don't necessarily think it's an issue of funding. As a matter of fact, I think funding is probably something that could get in the way, the ideological underpinnings that come with that funding and the unintended consequences. And that's something I think the progressives often omit to understand, the unintended consequences of their action as they're going to move us towards, you know, this new progressive utopia we're all going to live in. And I know, you know, look, they hate to go back to Chairman Mao and the Great Leap Forward, but I will do exactly that. And ultimately, this, billion people that were living in China, roughly, give or take, at that particular point in time, more now, of course, it was decided that, you know, to increase the harvest, what they would do is they would kill the birds, because the birds were eating the harvest. What a great idea. So, and you can do something like that. I think they wiped out the fly population in China as well. Like, it was your responsibility as part of the proletariat to kill a fly a day or something like that. And pretty soon they took care of the fly population. We probably wouldn't be able to do that in Australia. There's 26 million of us, and there seems to be 52 million flies at summertime. But they killed all the starlings, and rather than help the crops, just meant that there was no birds to eat the insects. And so the insects decimated the crops anyway. And there we are, the best laid plans yet again, once again, went to waste. It's interesting too that I saw recently, and I've heard this unconfirmed report, but I saw Lydia Thorpe's father came out and complained about Lydia, saying that she's a racist. She's a racist against white people. She's indeed racist against that part of herself that is at least half European. And it's her father coming out and saying this. And this is the sort of battle that I think is an epitome of where we've ended up, of this race-based politics that's been thrust upon us by the debate for The Voice, where families end up fighting each other. And we can see this with Lydia Thorpe's father actually coming out and calling her out as being racist. And as Lydia so rightly pointed out to her father, well, it's actually in this zeitgeist, it's impossible to be racist against white people. And I think Lydia's probably got a point there that her father hadn't recognised. Apparently, too, he's also a member of One Nation. Now, that's not verified, but I've heard he's a member of One Nation. So you can see, even in families, it's unaccountable, isn't it? Families have all these different opinions, and there's just how we're all still here, existing at least to some extent amicably, must be some sort of miracle in the first place. For the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's On events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Breaking down the headlines.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, Lauren Cranston, the daughter of a former Deputy Commissioner of the Australian Taxation Office, has been sentenced to a maximum of 8 years in prison for her role in a $105 million tax fraud conspiracy. Wow. Does it stay a conspiracy when it's a reality, or is everything else that's conspiracy becomes reality and remains a conspiracy? Anyway, sorry to confuse you, Jeremy, right now, but TNT Radio News producer Jeremy Beck has details on this story. He will clarify it all for us. Jeremy.
Thanks, Damien. Yes, well, a long-running Supreme Court trial has heard the conspirators, including Lauren Cranston and her brother, Adam Cranston, ripped off the federal government by keeping millions of dollars in goods and services tax and pay-as-you-go tax through a complex web of second-tier companies. Along with four others, last month, Lauren Cranston was found guilty of two charges over the scheme that ran for about 3 years to 2017. A legitimate company, Plutus Payroll, appeared to be squeaky clean and tax compliant, but a jury was told that money was siphoned off through lower-level companies and dummy directors on those companies. The Cranstons are the children of former Australian Taxation Office Deputy Commissioner Michael Cranston, who was not accused of involvement in this scam. Lauren Cranston's role in the conspiracy was to process payroll runs for Plutus and operate email accounts of second-tier companies, which a judge today found fell towards the bottom of the hierarchy. Justice Anthony Payne says Lauren was not involved in the initial planning and setup of Plutus, but found her participation began no later than February 2015. The judge says he harbours strong suspicions about her state of knowledge prior to that, despite her barrister urging an inference that she was young, unsophisticated, and lacking in curiosity. So, Damien, I think we'll be hearing more about this because Lauren Cranston's co-conspirators, including her brother, will be sentenced at a later date.
So this sort of a crime, Jeremy, it's hard to know. Is it so? Does this sentence, which seems quite a strong message in the community, 8 years, so that restores some trust? But is it the whole thing actually ultimately is just huge undermining of public trust in our institutions?
I think it's a bit of both, Damien. I see that it does send a signal that people in the high places, or certainly relatives of those in high places or former places, they're still accountable to the law. But at the same time, I see many crimes that have just gone unnoticed, brushed under the rug. And we've seen that particularly in the last few years, Damien. It's been a horror of a few years where some very high-level officials have virtually got away with crimes against humanity, or actually have, really. I mean, when you think about it, what we've endured, forced to take experimental injections against our will or lose our employment, all these sorts of things. So it certainly has undermined public trust. These kinds of events, I don't think, will improve it very much.
So is this something that we should be concerned about, tax fraud?
I think certainly it is a problem. I also think that there are a lot of big multinational companies which are not paying tax as you and I would be, and they're getting away with, well, it's in a way, it's legal. They have all sorts of loopholes. There's the Cayman Islands, tax havens, and they get away with paying no tax at all, and yet they're making billions and billions of dollars of profits. So all these things are big problems. But at the end of the day, the ordinary Australian, or for anyone in any other country, it's a similar situation. We lose out. We're paying a fortune in tax. We're paying too much tax, really, I think.
Jeremy Beck, news producer, thanks so much for that story. You are listening to TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Alan Miller.
There's been not just a reluctance, but an outright refusal to engage with ideas openly, transparently, and in good faith. Because obviously, if you think that your idea is the best one, you should discuss the virtue of them and the merits of them and attempt in a democracy to win the hearts and minds of people around those things. And all of the Enlightenment ideas around choice and privacy and conscience are things that people fought and died for over many centuries, really since the Greek Republic and the sense of what then came with Rome and all of the battles between those that would coerce and impose and terrorize and those that wanted freedom and believed in humanity's ability to decide and discern. And that's been a long fought, tough battle, and we stand on the shoulders of many brave people who fought those battles, and it's a testament to some of the problems but also some of the courage today that people still have to do that even in spite of the risks of being cancelled and shut down. We've seen obviously now all of the examples from the Twitter files in the UK with the lockdown files, and many of us have had experience of all of those things.
Alan Miller on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
Alex is just...
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought all the people that I knew who didn't drink were self-righteous people, holier than thou. So it never occurred to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was filled with people who had drank like I did, and now were the same people that I used to drink with, the same people that I liked, only now they weren't drinking. They were people just like me who had been drinking for a long time and found out that it didn't work for them anymore.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party? You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, my first guest this hour is a regular to the show. We didn't have him last week. We had an absence of him last week, but he's back with a vengeance this week. It's Dr. Chris Neal, who's the president of AMPS, the Australian Medical Professional Society. And TNT are sponsoring another doctor, a renowned British cardiologist, Dr. Asim Malhotra. He's coming out to Australia this month to engage with AMPS and Dr. Chris Neal. We will talk about that right now. But before we do, I've got a little grab from Dr. Asim Malhotra, and he's talking about the misinformation that has occurred to doctors, which has made them, in many instances, unwittingly harm their patients. You are listening to TNT Radio.
When we talk about evidence-based medicine, a very elegant analytical framework that we use is called the evidence-based medicine triad. So that's using our clinical expertise and clinical intuition or experience, the best available evidence, and last but not least, taking into consideration patient preferences and values through informed consent, and that means through transparent communication of risk and benefit. But unfortunately, well before the pandemic, evidence-based medicine has become an illusion. It has been hijacked by very powerful vested interests. And ultimately, as a result of this, we have now a pandemic of misinformed doctors and misinformed and unwittingly harmed patients based upon a number of factors. Biased funding of research, research that's funded because it's likely to be profitable, not beneficial for patients. Biased reporting in medical journals, biased reporting in the media, biased patient pamphlets, defensive medicine, and last but not least, medical curricula that fail to teach doctors how to comprehend and communicate health statistics.
Dr. Chris Neal, welcome back to the show.
G'day, Damo. Good to be here.
Good to have you. I'm really interested in seeing what Dr. Malhotra was saying there. He was saying informed consent is something that the community has lost. But what I was really interested in, he was actually saying it predates COVID. Informed consent was something that was compromised before COVID. Can you speak to that?
Well, interesting. I think that I'm not sure that it was lost completely. I think that what we've seen with the pandemic has been a next level, if you like, regarding the loss of informed consent, with very overt coercion and basically, you know, a co-opted media and all in on the act. Before that, I guess it's a nuanced issue. Informed consent requires a real doctor-patient partnership, and as everyone is well-versed, you know, full information on the part of the doctor, a good sort of discussion and total freedom whether to commit or back out on the part of the patient. In a sense, what we have had for a long time, we know for over 20 years that studies which are sponsored by big pharma, big companies are four times more likely to be positive. In other words, the bias towards a positive result, an upbeat sort of result of a new compound, a new drug, is much more the case when it's a sponsored drug from a big pharmaceutical company than, for instance, a repurposed drug or non-drug like a supplement, herb. There's plenty of studies in sort of herbs and supplements and vitamins and all sorts of things. Now, part of that is there's a whole lot of research pipeline. Traditionally, there's a, you know, 11 to 17 year pipeline getting ready for a drug trial in humans. But when you get to that point, you're probably also dealing with a bias. And it is more than possible to find to get study results which are positive by fraud, by cherry picking, and by multiple other means. And unfortunately, we've got real life examples of that happening.
I was just going to say, Dr. Asim Malhotra is calling out that bias, and he's coming here to Australia, an esteemed British cardiologist. You're going to be spending time with him. I think you're going to be doing events with him. Can you talk to us about what the purpose of his visit? He's being brought out, of course, by TNT Radio, and I'm just giving full disclosure there. Can you tell us what the purpose of that visit is?
Yeah, so we've been working with Asim for some time, in contact with him. He's done some kind of remote events with us. Basically, he, you know, this came out of our relationship. He's willing to come over. We grabbed that opportunity. It's going to be over 2 weeks of time we have around Australia, starting from May the 27th. On our website, just so people can be aware of the dates, they go to amps.redunion.com.au. If they go to the events tab, he's right up the top, the Asim Malhotra tour. And then you can register your interest and you can click which state you're in and get information as to when the event is going live and when the tickets are available. The aim will be to just allow the public to engage. We're extremely keen to make this an event which is open for all sorts of segments of the Australian public and our audience. So certainly the vaccine injured group that we're keen to reach out to, but all segments are welcome, and we certainly hope we can find a way to draw them into the events. But in addition, we'll be hoping to just speak to people of influence, including politicians, just if they want to avail themselves of an opportunity to speak to someone from outside our system who has a huge awareness of what's going on around the world in the issue of the mRNA vaccines, which is his main focus, then that's also part of the aim. And of course, my third aim is that he'll love it so much he wants to come back and do more with us and for us.
And where will you be going over those 2 weeks?
Well, again, we're basically going to be six states, including Canberra. It's going to be busy. You can click on, you know, if you can go on the website, you'll see there's New South Wales, so that'll be Sydney. There's about 3 days there, it would look like. Then Canberra, then several days in Melbourne, then we're very hopeful for Adelaide, and things are looking great there. Then back up to Gold Coast and Brisbane. And then the grand finale will be in Western Australia, and I mean a grand finale.
And is there an opportunity that you would be able to engage with the parliamentary process as well? Because I know when we've talked to you before on this program, you've talked about, and you haven't lost faith in the ability to be able to affect members and make it okay for members to begin to stand up for the vaccine injured and people that have obviously lost loved ones due to the vaccination process. So maybe parliamentarians like Russell Broadbent, I know he's come out, he's been really vocal. He's in the House of Representatives, because we've had obvious instances of senators which have been willing to stand up against the vaccine mandate. But now you've got someone in the lower house as well. Is that someone you hope to engage with Dr. Malhotra? Yeah,
absolutely. No, Mr. Broadbent's very supportive of Dr. Malhotra and will be hosting him in Canberra. He's absolutely committed to that, so we're looking forward to that. We'll be absolutely engaging. We want it to be okay for politicians to hear this, you know, our side of the story, and certainly Dr. Malhotra is one of the most articulate in expressing it. So, I've definitely mentioned it has to be okay for our elected representatives to learn more about this. That's part of what our role is, the educational role of AMPS. And it's interesting, look, I think I've mentioned the campaign that we've been preparing before. That's called myvaccineinjury.com.au. It's not live yet, It's probably a few weeks away. I might have even said that before, but I think the timing is going to be perfect because we're going to be able to launch this. The myvaccineinjury.com.au everywhere we go. And why that's so exciting is that that means that people who are affected by vaccine injuries can present their stories, and not only those who are affected directly, but those whose loved ones have been affected or who are now carers or maybe have even lost loved ones. We'll be able to communicate on this platform directly with the MP, and it'll be, I think, a really gratifying experience, because when you go on that website, you will see exactly how many letters have reached that MP, emails that is, and also how many they've opened. So there'll be, you know, we'll have a team working with us to make sure that we're really bringing that together powerfully and communicating directly with the offices of the MPs. And in addition, we're then going to make that go worldwide. Come about June, I'm hoping, we'll be able to lead, you know, other countries into the same sort of method, because, you know, I think we've actually got more MPs engaged with vaccine injured people and speaking out about the broader issues here than most countries do. I speak to colleagues in New Zealand. They say they've basically got no allies in Parliament. You may have seen recently in the UK a parliamentarian whose name escapes me, who mentioned the plight of the
Andrew Brigden.
Yeah, what a guy. So, yeah, mentioned the plight of the vaccine injured in a full house, and then we saw that house empty. And that is so tragic, so unacceptable. But I would love to see.
He got thrown out of the Conservative Party as well.
Yeah, isn't it incredible? But I'd love to see that sort of the much-needed reversal where it becomes, it becomes politically dangerous to not engage with this community. That's what we're trying to achieve. And look, yeah, we've talked about my insane levels of optimism, but I'm very hopeful that we can see a reversal. And I think we're beginning to see that in Australia, and I hope we can lead the way for other countries and see that reversal all over
We'll just go to news, and then we'll be straight back to talk to Dr. Chris Neal from AMPS about this very reversal. You're listening to TNT Radio.
Now, TNT Radio News.
It's hot tea. It's very hot.
It's hot news.
So hot.
Yeah, it's hot news.
Hot news.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Four civilians have been killed after Ukraine allegedly attacked a village in Russia's Bryansk region on Sunday morning. It comes as both sides ramp up long-range strikes against the other. A school attended by children of Russian diplomats in Poland has been seized and shut down by the government over a long-standing property dispute. And Turkey has announced a major victory in the fight against terrorism, with the country claiming to have killed the new leader of Islamic State.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Talking to Dr. Chris Neal, the president of the Australian Medical Professionals Society, and about the impending visit of Dr. Asim Malhotra, the renowned British cardiologist who's coming out to Australia starting from the 27th of May and speaking on behalf of people that are vaccine injured. Chris, the difficulty is, and we've obviously just talked about Andrew Brigden, who's spoken up on behalf of these people. He's also spoken out against the pandemic treaty that the English were trying to sign. And he got thrown out of the party. So ultimately, it's the difficulty of going against the WHO agenda. It was the word I was trying to look for, the pandemic treaty the English are going to sign with the WHO, the World Health Organization, that gives them authority to decide how we'll respond to any future outbreak of a pathogen. how do we stop people from considering us as just anti-vaxxers, and then therefore the parliamentarians aren't going to want to come on board too, because they know as soon as they hear that title, that that's trouble. How can we begin that change? It's just by continuing to talk about it?
I think so. Look, I agree that there's a number of things before us. The visibility of the vaccine injured community is incredibly important. We need to be seen as the champions of these people. We need to find a way forward. In addition, the excess death rates in Australia. This is something that is, you know, very clear. You know, we've got 16%, depending on how you look at it, excess death in 2022. There's more stats coming, and we don't have an answer. I personally believe it's likely to be multifactorial, but I think that it is intellectually impossible not to consider new vaccines pushed on over 90% of the population. That it has to be considered, and there's lots of plausible mechanisms, which we've been saying for some time, which should make us consider the vaccines as incredibly concerning and related potentially to excess debt. All of these have to be hit, and I think it is absolutely necessary that we pull out all stops. I'm talking, all of our sort of kind of weariness in the movement, our hands hanging limp. We need to put this aside and find ways of really rising to the occasion. There's a group in Adelaide that are right behind the WHO treaty. It's Australia Exits the WHO. I think that's definitely, after those two issues I just mentioned, the excess death, the vaccine injured, we have to start talking about the WHO. And yeah, I'm really committed to that. At the end of the day, we need to know who we are. It may well be that the WHO treaty gets passed in Australia, but it can't have happened legitimately without a referendum. Of course, they'll always want to avoid a referendum. That is how Australian politics has come to work, because they know that we're conservative when it comes to referenda. We will prefer to maintain the status quo. And that is what, I think that's a really powerful question to ask. You know, shouldn't we be having a referendum if you're asking us to hand over our health sovereignty, especially since that it's just happened after a pandemic, which so many of us feel was mismanaged in every possible way?
This American writer Naomi Wolf has come out and done a dissertation studying what was detailed in the Pfizer documents, the actual documents. I had a clip, but I don't have enough time to play it. But I'd just like to ask you, basically, she concluded from Pfizer's own documents that she thought this was an asymmetrical bioweapon that was released as a pathogen to destroy the West.
Oh, incredible hypothesis. I know she tends to link it to China as well. I would say it's got to be considered, and I'm open to all hypotheses. What I think the Pfizer documents have shown is, among other things, that we have, I believe, a cherry-picked efficacy population when it comes down to the last 170 patients upon which the vaccine efficacy calculations were made. I believe there's evidence that they are not randomly obtained, but that's still being analysed. The Pfizer documents and the Naomi Wolf's team have been incredible. Is it an injectable bioweapon? I know where she's coming from. I've never been happy about it. Why choose the toxic spike protein as your main element of the vaccine? Asking for trouble, and I think we'll be asking for a long time how the medical community let this thinking get past. I don't think we had the critical thinking skills we needed at the time. And I remember, you know, what I remember at the start of this, you know, like we're seeing every form of, you know, every system affected when you were looking for the side effects on the VAERS and the DAN, the databases. Why was it affecting so many organs? And all of my colleagues would just say, well, it's just in the deltoid. It's in the deltoid muscle. It's just an intramuscular injection. It stays there. And I was just not buying that. And then a few months later, we had a disclosure from the Japanese Ministry of Health of a Pfizer study, which showed the biodistribution, that is the lipid nanoparticles going everywhere. And this year we had that, you know, FOI from Department of Health here that showed the same data, the biodistribution. In other words, the vaccine, the mRNA lipid nanoparticle was being transported everywhere in the body, affecting all sorts of organs. And to this day, I'm not at all convinced that the doctors know that and have thought that through.
What Naomi Wolf was imputing, I thought too, was like a particularly so. Lipid nanoparticles appear in the liver, the brain, and particularly for women in the ovaries.
It
becomes a repository of them in the ovaries, and we know no way of actually taking those lipid nanoparticles out of the ovaries. Is that possibility of also a reason we talk about excess deaths, but the plummet in birth rates that we've experienced basically coinciding with the rollout of vaccine?
Yeah, look, the birth rate's not my focus. I think some of the statistics have sort of led to overestimating the effect on births. I think it was the Australian Bureau of Statistics released this, last year's stats, and in December they only gave a partial count, which led you look at the stats and see it plummeting to 6,000 births, whereas you usually over 20,000. I would have to say that was an incomplete December, with little trap. But yeah, there's lots of evidence of a fall in birth rates. And I too was concerned from the start about the accumulation of lipid nanoparticle and therefore the mRNA and the spike in the ovary. I mean, incredibly bad idea, no justification, and yet I tried to engage colleagues at the time. It seemed no one could really even compute it. They couldn't really even, it was like they didn't know where to even start to unpack that.
Dr. Chris Neal, so much to unpack, and that's what's fantastic about having Dr. Asim Malhotra coming out to discuss these issues along with your good self and many others, I'm sure, as from the 27th of May. And if you want to know more about that, just jump on the website amps.redunion.com.au. Dr. Chris Neal, thanks so much for joining the Damien Richardson Show.
No worries, mate. Thanks.
You're listening to TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion,
this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
The recent death of Instagram and OnlyFans star Christina Ashton Gorkani, who went by Ashton G online, is sad on an individual level, sad for her, sad for her family, but is perhaps more significant as a warning of the dangers posed by the cult of the self. Gorkani, with bulbous balloon breasts, counterbalanced by cantilevered bulbous balloon buttocks, was a cartoonish caricature of the cartoon character that is Kim Kardashian. Gorkani's death followed yet another surgical procedure to even further modify her already unnatural physique and exposes just how dangerous these body modification surgeries can be. A young teenage boy just recently died when surgeons tried to use his colon to create a vagina for him. This all-consuming worship of the false idol of the self, in which Western culture finds itself immersed, is deadly to our soul, what with yoga, Reiki, and other New Age spiritual practices, but potentially deadly to our physical existence as well. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several Soros-backed DAs are facing recall petitions, including George Gascon, DA of crime-riddled Los Angeles, and Pariza Degani Tafti from Arlington County and City Falls of Church, Virginia. Steve DeSano of Fairfax County, Virginia, elected in 2019, endorsed a progressive platform typical of the left-wing DA faction, making official policy not to prosecute more than 20 different crimes, including shoplifting for goods under $1,000, prostitution, and indecent exposure. Loudoun County District Attorney Bhuta Bibaraj, who championed anti-incarceration, made headlines for personally seeking jail time for Scott Smith, a father who was arrested for misdemeanor disorderly conduct at Loudoun County School Board meeting while protesting the school board's cover-up of his 14-year-old daughter's rape in a school bathroom. Bibaraj is now facing a recall petition.
If you're talking about it,
the United States of America should never, ever default on its debt.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My final guest this hour is a catch up again with Darren Bergworth. I talked to Darren, I don't know, it must be a couple of months ago now, and I see that Darren Bergworth is the convener of the public advocacy group My Place. Darren, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Damien. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you, mate. Now, I see you must be getting close to the target because I see the 7:30 report did a hit piece on you last week, even though despite the fact that you invited them out to come and have a look at actually how My Place operates. So you gave them total full disclosure, but they still did a hit piece on you. And The Age followed up with one too on the 22nd of last month. So you must be getting closer to the target, mate. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think we definitely are. Look, they reached out to me, but I thought it'd be a good opportunity for them to come down and actually, rather than writing their garbage from their ivory tower, without even knowing who they're writing about, for them to come down and meet the crew at our market. So they spent 4 hours here, pretty much the whole market. They interviewed lots of people. All they were shown were love and support, and they turned around and did what they did. But that's okay. It's had a positive effect for us. There is no such thing as bad publicity, as the old saying goes. And we've had probably, I don't know, 6,000 to 8,000 people have joined us in the last 3 weeks since that went to air.
So it actually helped at the end of the day. There's no such thing as bad news. All news is good news.
Yep, that's it, mate. There's a positive in every negative, and it has helped. And look, they can keep writing whatever they like about us. Most people know who we are. We know who we are. And most of the bile that came out of that report, look, there was some okay stuff, but you know that this same line that they keep rolling out about sovereign citizen, which is an oxymoron. You can't be both, and even the police know that. You can't be sovereign and a citizen in the same sentence or the same comment, and conspiracy theorists and anti-vaxxers. That's all they've got. They keep rolling out the same garble. Look, it's wearing a bit thin. Most people can see through it. And the harder they come at us, I think the more support we garnish.
I met you late last year. You were running for the seat of Dunkley in the federal election. I was running for the Senate. So we're both hopeful of that stage of still being able to make some sort of political change. Is that something that you've given up on now, the political process, and you're moving into more community activism?
Definitely. There is. I don't believe there's a political answer to this. We've tried for 50-odd years to get somebody in to keep the bastards honest, as Don Chip famously quoted, and this country's gone down the tubes year on year trying that model. I think it's time that we left a system that doesn't serve us, and that's what we're building, parallel systems with our own code of conduct, our own way of looking after each other, getting out of the health system, getting out of the contract system, and dealing direct with farmers, and defunding all the cabal stores, all the multinational chains and the supermarkets that we all know how they've treated our farmers, that they've driven them for suicide in a lot of cases. So how can we keep supporting those business models I think we're going to change anything is beyond me. So we've got multiple ways without trying to get into Parliament that we can make some massive changes in this country.
And when you say a system that no longer services us, could you just give us some examples of exactly what you mean by that?
Oh, well, it's a slave system, basically. As we are all coming to see, it's a dictatorship, and we're becoming we've moved away from socialism, and we're closer to communism in this country than socialism. And the people have had enough. The silent majority has said no more, and we're going to vote with our feet. We don't have to fight anybody. We're a collaborative group. We're an informative group. It's all about awareness and education. We're certainly not combative. There's no need to go down that path, and there's no need to do anything that's illegal or unlawful. What we're doing is neither of those things, and we're peacefully voting with our feet and our wallets.
And is it sort of the idea of your sort of targeted councils, because it's a place you can actually turn up and have your democratic voice, but that's been hasn't been the case necessarily, has it? Because a lot of those councils now are just shutting down those meetings, so you actually can't attend them and have your voice after all.
Yeah, but it's having an effect, because it's showing the broader community that democracy in this country is dead, and that we can't have a voice. And if you do, it'll get squashed in whatever way that they can. It's unlawful what they're doing. They are supposed to be open, transparent, and be there to serve the people. They're certainly not doing that. The system is broken, and if we can't get in there to fix it, then we walk away, we set up a new system, and their system will collapse.
So what are you pushing back against, like 15-minute cities, drag time story hour, anything else?
Well, it's pretty much anything that they're not following what the people want. So they're rolling out the UN. We're exposing them, basically. So while the argument about them being unconstitutional and unlawful for that reason through referendums and the like is falling on deaf ears, what's not falling on deaf ears is the fact that they have got to follow due process. They have a charter, they have guidelines and rules that they need to work to. Well, what we're doing now is pointing out that they're not following the rules that they're supposed to follow, and they're not following human rights rules, and they're not following a lot of other rules. So all we're doing is really exposing who they are and what they're doing. And because none of us have cared and we've turned a blind eye and had no interest in it for so long, so I think once people realise what's happening, and they're rolling out the United Nations agenda, the World Economic Forum's agenda, this New World Order, One World Government, all of that stuff is pretty much copied and pasted off their website straight onto our local council websites that's being pushed by the state government. So once people are exposed and have knowledge about what's going on, they will start to actually care.
Do you think they will? Because as you say, the councils aren't following their own rules. Are they being held to account for that, or are they just getting away with it because there's no one to actually with the will to actually hold them to account?
No, I believe that now that we are, if not holding them to account at this stage, that's going to come. That'll be part of the process. But we're certainly exposing them for who they are, and they're starting to make mistakes. They're being rattled. They're not used to having the scrutiny. That's only just part of what we're doing. That's the only semi-political stuff that we do, is to expose the unlawfulness and the fact that they're not even following their own guidelines. We do so many other things in my place with community and health and wellness and environmental stuff that we're building. So we're not a one-trick pony by any means, and we're building a whole new way of life, a whole new community, supporting the farmers, supporting the underdogs, informing people about what's going on, educating people. So, we're basically forming a new community, an educated community. And I think an educated community that's joined together is powerful, and that's what they're scared of.
So what are some of the aspects involved in building that community, Darren?
Really, it's just, we've got probably 120 groups Australia-wide now. It's all volunteers. So it's just a matter of getting a group of people in a town or suburb and saying, look, we want to get our community together. We set up a group, and they start forming a group. We've got groups over 2,000 now in a town, My Place Australia has probably added 4,000 or 5,000 since the 7:30 report. And it's just growing a group of aware people that are going to be linked. We're building our own platform. We'll have our own Facebook-style platform that we can operate on, that we own and control, and our own websites. All of our groups are going to be interlinked across the country. They're working groups. So you know, when these groups get set up and people come into a My Place Bundaberg, for instance, and they're in the health and well-being, or they're a naturopath, or they're a healer of some description, or more than likely they're going to go and want to be part of the health and wellness group. You know, people that are passionate about food and gardening might be in the food group. You know, people that are a bit more political might be in the community action group. And all those groups operate within each My Place community, and then those particular groups are going to be linked with every other single group, similar group, in all the other My Place communities around the country. So they'll be actually talking, collaborating, sharing videos, sharing stories, and actually sharing research, so that we're not doubling up and tripling up when we're undermanned for resources. People have already done PowerPoint displays on smart cities and 5G. So all of those things that have already been developed and the flyers that are already developed, they'll be shared with every other My Place community around the country as they come on board. All that work's already been done. So the smaller communities that don't have the resources get to use the information, the knowledge that's already been developed.
And what is it like, collective farms, et cetera, or, you know, so you can get your own produce, et cetera? What else is there?
Yeah, we a lot of the My Places now have got their hubs set up. We've got, we had 30 orders put in last Wednesday at Frankston. We've got farmers that come and deliver direct to us, you know, massive amounts of produce. And we box it all up, and people come and pick it up and pay for it. We're trying to link and get a database of local producers. If people choose to go directly to the farm, we're encouraging, if they're not doing those two things, to at least go to your local market, or your Dandenong market, or your Queen Victoria market. Just go to the markets and spend your money there rather than in the big chain stores. So it's just a whole mindset shift of the whole population that we're trying to encourage and make it easy for people to walk away from those supermarkets and find other ways, and at the same time support your farmers getting more money for their produce this way than they would be getting screwed over by the buying power of the chain supermarkets.
So you're trying to devolve from the system, devolve from having to spend your money with the corporations, so ultimately the people that might be responsible for enforcing the tyranny, we're forced to fund the people that would enforce the tyranny.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. Anyone that's still spending money at McDonald's, KFC, and all of those chain stores, big supermarkets, they're basically funding their own demise, because we know that all of those profits go back to about mainly two, but you know, maybe half a dozen different companies that all own each other. It's a web, incestuous web of business models that pretty much own and control the world, including the media and the pharmaceuticals and most of the food chains and supermarkets as well, and the petrol stations. Like, it's all intertwined, and it's all a control mechanism that once small businesses are squeezed out, you watch the prices go up when you have no choice. So we're making the choice now to create our own market and our own community, where we have full control over, you know, where we get our food and the quality of it.
We're talking to Darren Bergworth from My Place. Darren, you talk about devolving from a system which really includes the media, and we started off in this interview talking about how the media have vilified your group. Now, that is enforced by the police ultimately. I saw there was an event you were at on the weekend at Mombulk. You're just supporting it. It wasn't a My Place event, but you're happy to support it, thanking the police for their approach to policing the event. But ultimately, they're going to enforce the system that pays them, aren't they?
Look, I think in the short term, you know, they are, but once again, they're only, and the same with the media, all I keep putting back to Emily Baker from the ABC and the other journalists I speak to, is that you have a moral obligation to the community to actually report in an unbiased way and give a true representation, not just a one-dimensional kind of hit job. And, you know, at some point, your moral compass has got to come into this. That's the same with the police. And all we can do, same as the councillors, not all of these people are fully aware that what they're doing. They don't understand. They've only been taught a limited amount of the law. They don't understand the bigger picture. And I never have either until, you know, 18 months ago. I'm learning all the time. The police, we're having constant conversations. They're learning as well where we're coming from. So it's like we're all on a journey of discovery. And, you know, if we can be very informative and actually do our research and have some facts and figures and some evidence rather than just shouting, oh, because I know I'm right, because we know it's corrupt. We've actually got to have some information there to show why, it's some evidence and some proof. And we've done that. We've had a letter sent to the Yarra Rangers Council regarding the fact that we are allowed to film in their council.
Darren, we're about to go to hard news, mate. I have to pull you up there. We'll have to get you back on. Darren Bergworth from My Place, thanks so much for joining me on the Damien Richardson Show. You're listening to TNT Radio.